Hour number two of the Hoffman Show here on the Team 980, always live on the Odyssey app, iHeartRadio, TuneIn Radio as well. And yes, that is us streaming live on YouTube at the Team 980. The way we do things on this show is we try to tackle the top stories of the day here at 5 o'clock. We do so with an expert who covers them. We call it Not My Beat. This time of year, he's here, he's there, he's every bloody where. Mike Jones, senior NFL writer for The Athletic. Mike, where are you today on a presumably training camp journey?
I just got back from Jacksonville yesterday. I was in Tampa before that the last couple of days, so I'm catching my breath a little bit, unloading the notebook, and then I'll head down to head over to Pittsburgh next week.
So plenty on the docket, plenty already done. I do want to ask you about the Travis Hunter Jacksonville stuff, what you saw there, in a second. But there's actually like a decent amount of news that's just come trickling out over the last hour and change or so. So let's start with the one that I think actually matters for the regular season the most, and that's the Jordan Addison suspension. How big of a deal is that for the Vikings, especially with J.J. McCarthy taking over the reins there? Like, they still have Justin Jefferson, like, that's great, but part of that, what makes that offense special, is the two of them. So how big of a deal is it for basically a rookie quarterback to be missing Jordan Addison these first three games?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, it's three games, but in the NFL, like, every game matters, and so because you have a young guy, you want to have him surrounded with as much support as possible, and so you're not going to have that weapon. Now, the good thing for them is that Justin Jefferson commands so much attention that it should create opportunities for other people, but their offense, the options for J.J. McCarthy would just be that much more plentiful for him. And so, yeah, he already was going to be in for some growing pains as, you know, it comes out the gates, and so now it's just going to be a little more challenging.
How good, just, you know, real quick before we leave the Vikings, like, how good do you think they're going to be this year? That division was nasty last year, and Darnold obviously had a career year. How good do you think the Vikings can be in 2025?
I think they take a step backwards, you know, just because of they've got a first-year quarterback who's trying to – he's going to be learning on the go. It's not like he got a bunch of practice reps going against their starters running the scout team last year. So he was basically watching. Mike Shanahan used to always talk about mental reps, and yes, they're helpful, but physically doing it is another thing. And so I think they might take a little bit of a step backwards. They did load up around him. He's got a quality offensive line. They bolstered their defensive line. But again, they're growing pains, and I think that the Packers are going to be a little bit better this year. It'll be curious to see what the Lions are, not having, you know, having lost Ben Johnson, having lost Aaron Glenn. They got a new offense coordinator, new defense coordinator, and so the continuity, is it going to be a seamless transition? I don't know. So that could help the Vikings, but I think for them, they have their own growing pains to worry about, and they'll probably take a little bit of a little regression.
You know, Lions have already taken on some injuries as well. Didn't think it could get worse for them after last year, but they've already taken on a couple of knocks. Mike Jones, senior NFL writer for The Athletic with us here on the Hoffman Show. So you were just down in Jacksonville. The unofficial depth charts, which is every sports writer and sports radio host's favorite thing to mock, but they came out yesterday across the league. And the Jags list Travis Hunter as a wide receiver starting, a cornerback on the two line. Do you think that is what he will actually be this season? And what were your impressions of seeing him on an NFL field in person?
Yeah, I tell you, as far as crisp route running, the ability to go up and get contested balls, very impressive. He was practicing as a wide receiver when I was there. The way they're doing it, though, the first couple weeks of training camp, he would have like 2 days of a wide receiver because they said it takes more time to get on the same page, get that chemistry with your quarterback. And then anytime there was a break in practice, if there was a water break, if it was a special team segment, he was over on another field working with the defensive backs coach on how to react to certain pass routes. They had offensive and defensive assistants running pass routes, and he was like having to identify which one would be his responsibility. So he's still getting work. And then on the third day, he would practice exclusively as a defensive back. Now, they had a scrimmage, a inter-squad scrimmage, and he did play both ways. And I sat down with Liam Cohen, and he said next week he's going to start practicing offense and defense on the same day rather than splitting it up. So for right now, yes, he has gotten more action as a wide receiver. in the plan, you know, and in that scrimmage, it was more so when they had four receiver sets or a third down or goal line situation where he came in. But they're going to continue to monitor this thing. Liam Cohen said it's really a kind of a science experiment. They're tracking his speed, his pace, his calories. They don't want him losing weight. They want him gaining some more weight. They have all these different little metrics that they're studying with this, but they hope that he can be a guy that has a kind of an equal workload as far as offense and defense, you know, as the season progresses.
Mike, I think that's really interesting to hear, because one of my big questions as someone who used to be on a beat and kind of understands the rhythms of an NFL workday is, like, I never had any doubt he could do it as an athlete. It's just like, how do you divide your time? Like, you can't be right in two meetings at once, and you have meetings that are happening simultaneously because you don't need to be in the offensive and the defensive meeting unless you're maybe the head coach. But now you got a player that's got to be in both. You can't double practice. And so logistically, I just feel like there's the old school football mentality would have been like, we're not doing this because it can't work. And what I appreciate and what I would be curious to hear more about is the ways in which the Jags were like, well, it can work if we make it work. Like, we're going to invest extra time and extra people and extra resources into this one player. And I, like, do you have any other tidbits, details, stories about how the Jags are doing that to make this incredibly rare and unique talent worth taking with that high of a draft pick?
Yeah, it really has meant more work for everybody involved, because like you said, you can't be in an offense and a defensive meeting at the same time. And so if he's in an offensive meeting, after that meeting, he has to get with the defensive coach and they have to go over everything that he needs to know. If he's in a defensive meeting, he needs to go and meet with the offensive guy. So Liam, because I asked, like, hey, what's the biggest curveball that's been thrown to you as a first-year head coach? You know, sometimes like, oh, there's an injury or whatever. He's like, basically Travis Hunter. I mean, it's a curveball that we like, but it's totally different than anywhere or anything we've ever done before because of what we have to take into account. And so he said there is no downtime for Travis Hunter. He's never able to just sit in the locker room and you know, play air hockey or pool or whatever they have in their locker room with his buddies. If he's not in one meeting, he's in another meeting. And if he's not in any of those meetings, he's meeting with the trainers and their sports science people and the dietitians. And, you know, he's just got a ton of work. But they said that for him, it's just what he's used to. And he's not complaining about it. He's just like, okay, this is, but for them, it's adapting and adjusting and figuring out how to make it all work.
Mike Jones from The Athletic with us here on The Hoffman Show. Of course, Travis's former teammate, Shedeur Sanders, got a lot of headlines, not a lot of reps so far in Cleveland until, Mike, it was announced 20 minutes ago. He's going to start the preseason opener for Cleveland. Obviously, it's been, I mean, a somewhat comical training camp for them so far at the quarterback position, because everyone's like, oh, how are they going to do this with four wide at the quarterback position? And then they had so many guys banged up, they actually had to sign a fifth quarterback, Snoop Huntley, right, to take on some extra reps. So what's kind of the, how do you handicap what's going on in Cleveland? Is it kind of what we're hearing, do you think, just default to Joe Flacco starting and everything else is, you know, for talk show fodder, or is there more substance of what's going on in that building right now?
No, I think, because look, this roster is in win now mode. They have a lot of veterans, especially on the defense side of the ball, that want to win now, and I think they feel like Joe Flacco is the guy that's going to give them the most chance to do that right away. But that does not mean that if Shedeur Sanders looks really good throughout the preseason and his workload increases, that he won't wind up taking over as that starter. But for right now, they really are making him earn this thing. You know, there were a couple days ago, he didn't get any team reps. And then, you know, the day before that, he got some first team reps, got some second team reps. So it's just been a little bit all over the place as far as what his workload is. And, you know, we'll see how it plays out. But for right now, it does sound like it's Flacco, and we'll see how effective he can be at this, you know, late stage in his career.
All right, Mike, we've gone 10 minutes, and that's just so we could prove we could do it. It is possible to talk about the NFL for more than 10 minutes without talking about the trades and the requests and the contracts. And obviously, it's the most important story here, but I wanted to get to other stuff with you. But we land on Terry McLaurin. I'll just ask you broadly, where do you sit right now with where this negotiation is and really, you know, as someone who's been around this stuff for a long time, where it should go?
I mean, I have to think that they're going to wind up getting something done. I have real questions about the advice he's getting, questions about the capability of his agent. You know, what took him so long to demand a trade? Why didn't you do this sooner and then really put pressure on him? You already, now you're in the building and you've said you want to be here and everything, and then now it's, you know, so we'll see how this plays out. But again, they know they need him. I asked a lot of guys around the league, talent evaluators, what they thought of him. And a lot of them say, you know what, he's good, he's talented, but nobody had him in the top five. They had him more in that 7 to 12 range as a wide receiver. So, you know, those guys don't get $33 million a year, you know. And so we'll see what the number that they settle on. I think it winds up being somewhere maybe in that 28 to 30 range, and 30 might be kind of high. But eventually they've got to get this thing done. They need to find a way to end it, and they need him on the field, because if you're trying to help Jaden Daniels take another step forward, that's why you went out and got Deebo Samuel, so you could pair him with Terry. And, you know, I think he's probably worth a little more in Washington than he is elsewhere, and so they got to find a way to get it done.
Yeah, no, the 28 to 30 range and everything you said sounds exactly right. It's where I'm at too. How much credence do you give, and to anyone you've talked to this around the league especially, how much do you give to like the, they have the money, just do it? Not necessarily at like the $33 million level, but let's say they get closer to like the 28 to 30 is the size of the argument. And you're Washington and you look at your cap sheet and you go, like, yeah, we need to pay Tunsil and Lattimore potentially next year, and a couple of other guys, Payne potentially could get an extension. But, like, we have oodles of cap room. Do you give credence, and do you think if you talk to other evaluators around the league and other general managers, contract people around the league, they give credence to the, this guy's been a great guy, he's one of our team leaders, let's just get it done, we have the room argument?
Well, I haven't asked people what they think Washington's salary cap situation is, but I think it probably, in addition to, you know, the average year, you know, number per year, I think that the guarantees also have a lot to do with it. And yeah, Washington has the money to pay him 28 to 30 million, but is he wanting fully guaranteed or, you know, 90% guaranteed? And Washington's like, man, you know, you're almost 30. You're going to be 30 to fully guarantee a deal for a guy that's, you know, that could be part of it as well. So yeah, they've got to figure it out. They've got to be creative, but again, they need him. He needs them. They've got to just figure out a way to do it that suits everybody. And I think once the crunch time, I mean, look, here we are. They haven't even played their first preseason game. They would like to have it done. They don't really need to have it done. Right. And so if they, you know, this thing, they've got, you know, one more week in the preseason, or maybe 2 weeks left, then you hopefully see them get it done, so that way he has some time to get on the field and get real work in before the season starts.
All right, two more quick questions here for Mike Jones, senior NFL writer for The Athletic. First of all, do you think anything dramatic happens with Micah? Are the two sides going to bicker, and then he's going to get a big fat contract because Jerry Jones is a bad negotiator and always gives the player what he wants, and Micah Parsons is going to be the most expensive non-quarterback in football in 2 weeks, and that's that?
Yeah, this is Jerry Jones' soap opera. This is what he loves. He loves that everybody's talking about them. He doesn't care that it's, you know, dysfunctional or that it just is chaotic. He loves being talked to. He loves reporters asking him what's going on. He loves the back and forth, even though it looks ridiculous. And so, you know, and it's frustrating players, you know, CeeDee Lamb, you know, tweeting and expressing his frustrations over the whole thing. And so, yeah, Jerry's going to do what he's going to do, and eventually he'll open up the checkbook just before the start of the season, and Mike is going to get what he wants. And, yes, he will be the highest-paid defensive player, and the Cowboys will, you know, get back to focusing on football.
Never forget that Dak Prescott could have signed an extension 2 years early. The only thing that was significant that happened between when he could have and when he did was his ankle turned the wrong way, and then he became the most expensive quarterback in football. Just that is the quintessential Jerry Jones negotiation, as you, Mike, of course, know. But my last question for you, Mike, is kind of roping this all together, the James Cook and all of that, Trey Hendrickson as well. As the hold-in has become more popular, as players are avoiding what was negotiated in the CBA is mandatory fines, right? So that was the thing. It's like you used to be able to negotiate away the fines. Now you can't, and players were like, aha, If I show up, you can't find me. I'm just not going to practice. Do you think that this is something, the contract holdouts and the way that players are going about this, that will be addressed in the next CBA negotiations, or is it just not that big of a deal and this is kind of how business is going to be done for the foreseeable future in the NFL?
You know, it's going to be interesting. I mean, we're still a little ways off. They probably won't start. I mean, they've got a mess over there at the NFLPA, so nobody's even thinking about having preliminary talks about this CBA. You know, they probably won't start having conversations till 27 or, you know, maybe 2028. And it's going to be interesting to see. I'm sure the players would like to get this thing removed, but the owners are not going to be inclined to give something back to the players. They're always trying to take away, not, you know, give something back. So I would not be surprised if this is just the way of business now. You show up, they can't make you practice. It's, you know, and the players know, hey, it's just business. The coaches know it's just business. I don't know if it's that much more effective than not being there. Some people feel like, hey, if you're there and every day there's the reminder in your face that, oh, he's not practicing, he's just kind of, you know, over on the other field, and so we really need to get something done. But I don't know if it really makes that much of a difference with them. But it's going to be interesting to see, where this goes as far as the hold-ins versus hold-outs. It's always fascinating NFL business.
It definitely is. And I sometimes wonder if it works in the opposite way, right? If you're a guy like Terry and you love your teammates genuinely, yeah, and you really want to be out there, when you're there, it's like, damn, they're right there. My ankle could feel better. And instead, you could be out, you know, working out on your own somewhere else and feeling a little more animus about it. Mike Jones writing about all of this and more. Definitely want to read up on what he saw down there in Jacksonville amongst his other notebook emptyings along the way of his training camp tour at The Athletic. Mike, always appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thanks, Craig. I'll see you, man.
Sounds good. Mike Jones, everybody, senior NFL writer for The Athletic. And to follow up on that real quick, I think that it is something the NFL, from a league side, Mike took it from the PA side. If you're the PA, I think you're like, yeah, we figured out the workaround. If you're the league, the whole point was like, we're trying to get you guys to honor your contracts. And so if you're the league, I wonder if there is a way to prevent the hold-in. Like, if you show up, you must practice unless our doctors evaluate you and say X, like if you can't pass your physical. Again, I don't know how severe, and like this is the thing with Terry, right? It's like Terry has some level of an ankle injury. Like, it's not a totally fake ankle injury. Is it one that he might return from faster if he had a contract? Sure, but there is some real ankle injury that is somewhere in his ankle, right? Micah Parsons is just flat out not practicing. James Cook is just like, James Cook was practicing, then was like, never mind, I'm not practicing anymore. And so if you're there and you're not participating and it's not a coach's decision, there seems like there's probably some way to get that not to be okay. And so I wonder, as the league and owners try to leverage stuff, but if I'm the Players Association, I'm fighting back being like, well, there is a simple way to do this. You guarantee our contracts, because if it's not guaranteed money, then I'm not really inclined to show up and play. Like, yes, if I play, I get paid. But I think the reason people also sometimes get in a tizzy about that is if you have a contract that's only guaranteed for injury and you get, so let's say this isn't the case with Terry, but this is the case with some of the other players that we're talking about. Let's say you're guaranteed for injury in 2026. And so what that means is if you can't pass your physical by the time 2026 rolls around, you get your money. If you can pass the physical, then they can cut you based off performance. So if you blow out your knee and you're genuinely out for an extra year, okay, that is going to be, you get your money. But if, let's say you get hurt during the season, and you miss a couple of games, your production suffers, you're not quite right when you get back. Now you've hurt your value. Now you're probably not seen as worth as much money. So now you get cut technically for performance, but even though you know your performance was because of injury, there's no delineation there. if the money was guaranteed, it wouldn't be a problem. So are you less inclined to come back? Are you more inclined to come back and push through? Like, it winds up affecting the conversation in a way that's got some unintended consequences. And I think without the guaranteed, like, guaranteed contracts also have unintended consequences. Like, you have to pay a ton of, if you're the Browns, you guaranteed Deshaun Watson's contract like an absolute group of buffoons. And now he's on top of all the terrible things and the bad press and the, you know, the bad whatever that he brought, bad play that he brought. He's injured. He can't play. And you owe him every single cent of the $230 million. So, like, that can happen. But that's how it is in every sport. You know, the Bucks had to stretch and waive Dame Lillard because he blew out his Achilles, right? So every system has its ups and its downs. But if you're thinking about how do we prevent holdouts, the reason they don't happen in other sports is because you can't renegotiate contracts in other sports the way you do all the time in the NFL, because most other sports have mostly guaranteed contracts. The NBA, you see this sometimes because there are partial guarantees and non-guaranteed deals that sometimes get turned and converted and flipped. But generally speaking, that's why you see this in the NFL more than others, is because even the best players on the biggest deals typically have funny money years at the end to inflate the value and stretch the cap proration of the signing bonus to help it be a little bit more team friendly. But that also gives the team control in those final years in a way that players don't really like. And if they feel like they've outperformed, then they're going to ask in those years to be treated accordingly. And that's where you get into the tiffs and the arguments that we are seeing around the league right now. When we get back here on the Hoffman Show, the Athletics are at the Nationals tonight. And Anthony, can you real quick, just on one of the computers in front of you, search, I want you to just search Nationals Athletics on Google. And I want you to see what you notice. See, because you have, you'll get some sponsored ads. Nationals versus A's is what I searched. You get some ads for some tickets. And then there's the big black Google box with the game tonight. And what's it say?
I see Nationals versus Athletics predictions odds. You said a big black box.
Yeah, there's like a box. It's got a black heading, Athletics versus Nationals, MLB today, 6:45 p.m.
Yep, I see
above
that.
The top stories. What's it say? What's in the first, like, right below today, 6:45?
It just says Athletics.
And then it says at?
Washington Nationals.
Yeah, see how there's no city in front of Athletics?
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about with Damon Amendola next.